We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That could either be NFL music, or it could be like a fight scene montage, like from an old Batman TV show, comic book superhero from the 60s, 70s.
Some Adam West Batman.
Exactly. That's what I thought when I first heard it, but I'm assuming it's NFL music, right?
Yes, it's NFL films. NFL film 6.
I like that. Do you still have it up? Yeah, I can see it. Pow!
Pow!
Bam!
Bam! Well, the funny
Blast.
Thing is, when I was like a kid, so we used to watch SpongeBob growing up, and
oh, yeah.
So one of the Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy, who were like, they
yes,
were spoofing
yes.
like those old, you know,
yes.
comics, and they'd always play this song. And it was just a total spoof of all of those like old school like comics that you would like the pow and all that stuff. But yeah, that was when I listened to that song. I was like, oh, we're playing that for sure. I don't know if Brad's gonna
wow.
keep it together for this.
Woo!
Yeah.
There's a guy who trolls me on Twitter saying your laugh sounds fake. Chris, you tell him. I'm like crying in here.
Yeah, he's dying in here. But yeah, Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy. This reminds me of the days when I was a young one watching some SpongeBob, and they'd always introduce them with this, and it was just a total spoof and great. But
wow.
Yeah, NFL films. And once again, we have Brad Porter in studio now.
Yes.
So we will.
Yes.
That's a positive to start
yes.
the day.
Woo! What a way to open the show. Wow, just laughing hysterically. That's all right. It's a good way to open a Sunday. This is Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. My name is Brad Porter, trying to contain my excitement. Chris Bohlig, or Chris Bollins, is running the show. I saw you changed your Twitter account name to Chris Bollins, by the way, which is an inside joke here at WHB.
I did not change it, but I should probably.
I think it says Chris Bollins on there.
Is it really?
Maybe there's a fake Chris Bohlig who...
Yeah, maybe there's like a burner account that I have no clue about that is using my... Let's check this right now. I have my Twitter up.
Well, just look at my who's favorited my tweets, and you'll see a Chris Bollins.
It is. I just noticed this. How did this happen?
So is that...
So I did not change that.
Maybe.
I did not change that.
Okay.
Someone else changed it. So someone must have like I must have been like logged in somewhere
yes.
to Twitter, and I had no clue that.
So it's an inside joke. Let me explain this real quick. It's an inside joke here at WHB, but if we're talking about it on the radio, let's not make it an inside joke. So we get emails every week that tell us what the schedule is. Boss sends it out, tells you what days you're working, what shows you're hosting. And usually Chris and I are on there for Saturday and Sunday. And so Chris is Chris Bohlig, B-O-L-L-I-G, but for several weeks, the emails either said Chris Bollins or Craig Bollins. It was never the correct name. So
I'm really interested because I'm...
Did you leave it open on like a desktop, your Twitter account?
I must have, but usually I must have forgot to log it out or something and someone just changed it.
I used to do this... when I was at Metro Sports, people would leave their Twitter accounts open on their desktop because it was before the, you know, people would only do it on their cell phone. And I would see it and I would be like, okay, I'm going to send out a tweet from this person's account. Something like, I like soft puppy dogs or something like that. Oh,
we're off to a fire
we are
start
rolling.
Today.
We are rolling. First of all, let me explain why we're in studio. Instead of up in St. Joe at Chief Training Camp. So yesterday we were at training camp, and our signal kept dropping like every couple of minutes, and it sounded really bad. It was frustrating. It was so bad that Seren Petro, who thankfully listens to the weekend shows, was driving around listening. He was frustrated, and he drove to the studio, and he carried us for about 2 hours, and I tried to chime in when I could, when our line would hold up, but Seren, on his day off, came in here to carry the show. And I, you know what? That says a lot about Seren that he would do that.
Absolute
on
beast.
His day off.
Absolute. There's a reason why he has the spot he has.
Yes.
And he really cares about this station a lot. And
yes.
I really thank him for what he did yesterday. That is, you know, that's a champion move right there.
Yes. And then he texted me. He was like, hey, I'm not trying to take over your show. And I said, look, we really don't have a show right now because our line isn't working. It's what happens. We moved locations up in St. Joe. This is a long, drawn-out story. I don't mean to make it that long. We switched locations, and our signal went from okay to really bad. And that's what happens. So we're dealing with it. We're working on it. We have Allie Trost up there. She's going to call us here in a few minutes and give us an update from Chiefs training camp. By the way, our training camp coverage brought to you by Missouri Lottery, Mosaic Life Care, and GM. So Allie Trost will be checking in here in just a few minutes with updates from St. Joe. At 9:30, Max Reaper from Royals Review is going to join us. There's not much to say about last night's game. We'll get into that in a minute, but we can get into other things deeper as in what the Royals didn't do at the trade deadline, what they could build on for next season, some of the minor league guys. I mean, geez, Jackson Kowar is just...
I reckon it.
Wow! And Chris Bubik?
Yeah, and also how Ned Yost said last night that he's not going to use an opener when they kind of teased it when they were...
Right.
You know, they brought... Zimmer and Staumont both did it at the AAA level.
Yes.
And they were saying, and Ned Yost, he deflected the question early on in the season, but he said he sounded more open to it. And even Dayton Moore sounded like if they had the arms to do it. And why not when you expand the rosters and you have more arms in September?
Yep.
Might as well just try it to see what it looks like. Because when the Royals were winning the World Series and went to back-to-back and won in 2015, they were on the cutting edge of building
yes.
bullpens to win World Series, which had never really, you needed a good bullpen, but they had an average starting staff.
Right.
And it was really get us to the sixth or the seventh and we'll win the game.
Right. It was teams in contention, you know, before that would always look for the closer at the deadline if they needed a closer. But the Royals were kind of on that cutting edge of, well, let's also look at innings 6, 7, 8, and 9. Hochaver, Herrera, Davis, Holland. So yeah, why not experiment with the opener? But trying to teach an old dog new tricks sometimes. So we'll talk about that as well with Max Reaper at 9:30. 10 o'clock, we're going to leave open because we expect the Chiefs to have their press conferences rolling up in St. Joe. So we'll hear from one coach and probably two or three players. That's the standard protocol for training camp in St. Joe. They're off and rolling. Early start this morning, 8:15. And I was going to look at the schedule for today. Let's see. Season ticket member day. Oh, it's a team autograph session today, too. If you're on your way to St. Joe or if you're already there and you're listening to the radio, the whole team is signing autographs today, which they did yesterday, too, on Family Fun Day.
I'm sure. I don't think they're going to go as long as they did. They went like 2.5 yesterday.
They went long, yeah.
They went. I remember because last Sunday, I think they got done around like 10:15
because
when you were up there and talking to Nick, we cut in right when you guys were talking at around 10:15. So maybe they'll go long again today, but I would expect it. But you never know with the Chiefs. You just never know. It's as you said, Brad. It's all fluid.
Right.
The training camp is fluid.
It is.
It is. So we'll see when we get that sound.
Yep.
But we'll take it live to the press conference.
Yeah. So we'll have Allie Trost and Darren Smith up there with all the press conference coverage. good stuff. And then at 11 o'clock, we'll have Jared Dubin on the show, first-time guest from CBSSports.com, covers the National Football League. It's my Carl Peterson.
And NBA as well. He does it all for
NBA.
CBS. A lot of the guys on CBS Sports, they do a lot of different coverage for multiple different sports.
Right.
Remember, we had Pete Blackburn on to talk NHL. He does some MLB stuff as well. He even writes a few NFL articles. So they're always doing dipping their feet in everything.
If you're ever in a need for just content to read, CBSSports.com. I mean, I think they have a new article posted like every 8 minutes, maybe sooner. So Jared Dubin, and I always when I say the National Football League, that's my tribute to Carl Peterson. Did you see him at the Hall of Fame last night?
He was glowing last night.
I tell you what, it was, for whatever you think of Carl Peterson, this is the thing. He got after the media a lot. I think he probably jumped on me a couple of times. Not probably, he did. That's okay. Can take that. But you knew where you stood with Carl. Everybody knew where you stood with Carl. There was no secrets about it. It wasn't like Scott Pioli, where he would be nice to your face and then try to stab you in the back through other means. And I know firsthand exactly what Scott was doing when he was here in Kansas City. It's a lot. I'll tell you another time, Chris.
Interested to hear that.
Yeah. He tried to get me through outside means. But when I saw him in person, hey, Brad, how you doing? Scott, how are you doing? Are you trying to stab me in the back today? Like you did to everybody else?
Oh.
Wow, sorry. Rough. Wow, that got hot.
It's okay. He's not here anymore.
No, I'm sure he cares.
He's long gone.
He's got a pile of money to sleep on. He doesn't have to worry about what I say. But Carl Peterson last night, so Tony Gonzalez is up there giving his acceptance speech, and Tony looked like he might have been enjoying himself before he gave his speech. Kind of rambled at times. That's what he does. He goes on he rambles. He
all of those. So I was watching the Royals game, and then I go back, and mind you, not this started at like 6 o'clock.
It was like 4.5 hours.
It was extremely long winded.
Yes.
They should like maybe start doing what they do with the Oscars at the Hall of Fame. Speech.
Start playing the music.
All right, guys.
Well,
the
recitation of statistics is the one that just kills me. We know they put up great stats. I don't need to hear, well, he had 19,246 yards and blah, blah, blah. We all know. You can cut it down a little bit. So there's Tony Gonzalez giving a speech, and he thanks Carl Peterson for drafting him in the first round. And they do a cutaway to Carl, and Carl's beaming, and he's looking up at the stage. And his hair has, I have not seen Carl in a while. I see him around town, it seems like once or twice a year in Kansas City, because I believe he still has his place on the plaza. His hair is jet white. We always say
jet. At least it's not jet gray.
It's not jet gray. It is white.
Rather white than gray hair.
It's a little long. If he was in Catholic school, he might need to be trimmed up a little bit before the first day of classes. There's Carl beaming. Here's Tony, you know, talking about having beers backstage or having beers during the week with all these Hall of Famers, and it was good stuff. The one, I'm happy for Tony. Look, let me say this about Tony Gonzalez, and I'm not the first one to say it. I'm not going to be the last. He's the hardest working player I ever watched in practice. Not just a game. I'm talking about practice, man. Allen Iverson. Talking about practice. Tony Gonzalez, for all the times you hear people say, oh, he's always the first one out of the locker room and the last one to leave. Tony Gonzalez actually was the first one out and the last to leave every practice because he talked about it in his speech last night, or his cousin who gave his introductory comments said after that, was it the second year, third year, he had all those drops, and it was
the second year because he really had a kind of a coming out party in that third year.
Yeah, so the second year, Tony Gonzalez was bad in terms of pass catching.
He led the league in drops.
Yes, and he was bad. And after that season, Tony Gonzalez was out on that jugs machine every day after practice and would catch, I'm just going to throw an estimate, it had to be 100, 200, 300 footballs, just firing one after another. And if you were on those teams and you were not putting in that work, you should have been embarrassed. Because Tony Gonzalez had a really bad second season. Didn't play a lot in the first year with Marty. Got some more time in the second season, had the drops, got labeled as a dropper, and he dedicated himself to getting better. So spent the time on the jugs machine, firing footballs, probably thousands over his career. So much hard work. Then he had to become a good blocker, and he mentioned this in his speech last night. He mentioned Jason Dunn as the best blocking tight end he'd ever seen, and that is correct. Jason Dunn was an absolute monster for the Chiefs, paired up with Tony Gonzalez. Jason Dunn could catch the football if you needed him to. If you needed one catch in a game, maybe a couple. Wasn't going to set the world on fire. His knees weren't the best. He wasn't fast anymore. You talk about a guy who's crushing it, Jason freaking Dunn. And Tony Gonzalez learned a lot from Jason Dunn on how to block.
Yeah, they
a
were
lot.
So many double tight sets.
Yes.
A lot more running.
Yes.
In that day and age of the NFL, the running back was a huge.
Yep.
Especially with the Chiefs not having, they had Trent Green, of course, but
right.
It's not like they had a perennial franchise quarterback.
Right. Yeah. And so Tony became a really good blocking tight end in addition to being the greatest receiving tight end of all time. You can throw out Gronk if you want. I'm not there with you. I'm sorry.
I think it's just impressive, the longevity.
Yeah, 17 seasons.
Yeah, with the consistency, longevity, and the performance at which he played at for most of those 17 years.
And what they said, he missed two games?
It seemed like he was all...
He missed two games?
Yeah.
And believe me, he was injured. I would see him in the locker room after practice or after a game, limping around, taped up, ice all over the place. I saw that. But he was there. It's like Tim Grunard. Tim Grunard missed, what, one game in his career in the National Football League? Longevity. So Tony Gonzalez, well done last night, and had some great things to say about the Chiefs fans. And he talked about, in addition to Jason Dunn, he talked about Willie Rofe and Will Shields and Grunny and all these guys, and he said he stole their moves from them. Stole their moves, which is what you do in the National Football League. If you steal from the best.
He even mentioned Brody Croyle. How
Brody
about that?
Croyle. He mentioned Tyler Thigpen.
Hey, I will. But the thing is, he can mention Tyler Thigpen because Tyler Thigpen, I think, threw him the ball every time in that 2008 season.
Bailout.
That when they won two games in 2008.
Yes.
I had season tickets that we were splitting
with another
family. Wow. I saw the only home win that year. It was Larry Johnson's last really good game with the Kansas City Chiefs against the Denver Broncos at home. Didn't see a win the rest of the season. Damon Heward was still playing the quarterback position early on in the season. Then he got hurt. And then Tyler Thigpen enters from Coastal Carolina.
That's right. Tyler Thigpen, who had courtside seats to UMKC basketball games.
Yeah, but he balled out sometimes. I really enjoyed watching Tyler Thigpen because even though the team was atrocious, it always was entertaining. It always seemed like the games were high scoring or decently close, even though they would lose. And Tony G had an incredible year that season.
Yes. So Tony thanked all the quarterbacks, even Brody Croyle, even Tyler Thigpen. Spent a lot of time on the Chiefs, a little bit on the Falcons. Thanked Matt Ryan. Thanked his coach. But, you know, he was complimentary of both fan bases. For the people who want to hate on Tony because he, you know, when they made the Hall of Fame announcement, he was in Atlanta, right, at the time?
And he said Atlanta made his career, and that made a...
But it was in front of Atlanta media. So I didn't take it. I didn't get sideways about that.
Let's be honest. These guys are professional athletes.
Yes.
They'll say whatever the fan base that they're
Who's your audience?
Yes.
It was Atlanta at the time.
He's from California. He has really no affiliation.
Right.
He played in Kansas City. He played here a long time.
He said Kansas City's his home.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't live here anymore, but he said Kansas City, it feels like home. So.
Yeah, so.
So I don't have the, you know, if you want to dump on Tony Gonzalez because he said something nice about the Falcons, great. That, you know, have fun with that. I don't. I think he was a fantastic player, and I liked it. From a media standpoint, when the Chiefs were going through those awful seasons, especially, as you mentioned, Chris, the 2-14 season, you could count on a couple of guys to be in the locker room after every game to answer the questions. The tough questions. Why'd you guys suck today? What didn't work today? It was the same thing every week. The team just wasn't very good. Tony Gonzalez was there. Now, you may have had to wait a little bit because he took time to get himself dressed and, you know, like to... I think Jason Anderson talked about it this week on The Zone. You know, he liked to put on the lotion and take his time, put on the clothes and put on the cologne. But when he turned around, he stood there and answered all the questions. Stand-up guy. And that doesn't... Maybe that doesn't mean anything to... fans, meant something to me. Guy was there. When the best player on the team is willing to answer the questions after tough games, then where's everybody else? And guys diving in lockers, guys sneaking out the back door. It happens. I don't care. If you don't want to talk, don't talk. But Tony answered the tough questions. One more thing on the Chiefs Hall of Fame, Johnny Robinson. Way, 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 way long overdue. He played his last game 48 years ago. I think he said 47 years ago. And it took him this long to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's the sixth member of that Chiefs starting defense in Super Bowl IV to be inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I wrote down a couple of things. I tweeted this out last night. How fitting was it for Johnny Robinson to go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame on the same night as Ed Reed? two of the greatest safeties to ever play this game. Ed Reed in the modern era, best ever. So let me throw out, I don't like to get too far into the numbers, but in this case, I'm going to use a couple of numbers. Johnny Robinson had 57 interceptions. 57 in his 12 seasons. He started out his career as a running back. He had 15 offensive touchdowns as a running back, and then he converted to safety. 57 interceptions. 741 interception yards. 57 interceptions. You know how many Ed Reed had?
No.
64.
Yeah, I know he had.
They're in the same neighborhood.
60, yeah.
They're in the same neighborhood. Johnny Robinson. And as some of the, you heard some of the, if you heard the speeches last night or some of the videos, he kind of reinvented what a safety was at the time. It's too bad they didn't keep track of fumble recoveries and forced fumbles at the time, because he had a ton of those too. Chris Berman, when he was doing his introductions for the veteran players, he said when he started getting involved with the Pro Football Hall of Fame and making introductions, there were a couple of guys that he was like, how is this guy not in the Hall of Fame? Jerry Kramer was one. Johnny Robinson was the other. Way long overdue for Johnny Robinson, and just a prince of a human being. If you saw the introductory video by his stepson last night, they talked about all the charity work that he does, that he's always done, that you'll always find him helping people out at his charity. I've only gotten to interview him one time in my life, and that was probably 10, 12 years ago. Just an absolute peach of a person and a great human being. Talking about the old AFL days and how important it was for playing in a league like the AFL that put a focus on integration, which the NFL had not totally embraced yet, but the AFL did 100%. So congratulations, Johnny Robinson, Tony Gonzalez. And I guess you want to throw in Ty Law. He was here for a cup of coffee in Kansas City. So let's take credit. Three Chiefs, Hall of Fame. All right, speaking of the Chiefs, we're going to check in now up in St. Joe at Chiefs training camp with our Allie Trost. Allie, how are you this morning?
Oh, Brad, I am doing fabulous. It's very sad to see the 810 booth empty this morning.
Well, like I said, we had technical difficulties yesterday, so it is what it is, but we have people on the ground. By the way, our training camp coverage brought to you by Missouri Lottery, Mosaic Life Care, and GM. So Allie kind of set the scene for us this morning. Practices a little over an hour in. Anything stand out so far?
Well, first off, let's just start by saying that Chiefs Kingdom is not letting up when it comes to their training camp attendance. Just as busy today as it's been all week and all weekend long. So, Chiefs Kingdom, you're incredible. It's amazing to see so many people out here. But I think the biggest news out of training camp on the Chiefs side of things is the fact that Tyreek Hill did not have his helmet or pads on. He suffered a quad contusion earlier in the week and is not participating in training today. In addition to him, Damian Williams still out, Garrett Dieter still out, and then safety Jordan Lucas, Damian Wilson, and Rashad Fenton are also not participating today. But aside from that, the defense has been looking really good, really strong, high energy, as we've been seeing and hearing from the players all week in the press conferences. So it's been good. And actually, just before we got on in an 11-on-11, Mecole Hardman and Juan Thornhill just showing so much speed. So these rookies are really fast and looking really, really, really good for this team here.
And Mecole Hardman, I mean, we've seen that speed, but I had said before training camp, the player that I really wanted to watch was Juan Thornhill, the new safety, draft pick for the Chiefs, and he is picking off passes on a rate of about one a day, which is, look, it's training camp, I get it, don't want to blow it out of proportion, but he looks really good.
Oh, that is what this team needs, is some speed and just consistency, and especially if these young rookies can get reps during camp and not just get the reps, but use those opportunities to showcase that talent, showcase that skill. It's only going to make them better when the regular season comes about.
We're speaking with Allie Trost. She's live at Chiefs training camp in St. Joe, Missouri. You mentioned a couple of injuries there, Tyreek Hill, and I'll be interested to hear after practice if this was just precautionary, because the team went pretty heavy yesterday. They went long and they ran a ton of plays yesterday, probably more than they had previously in training camp, and already having been dinged up a couple of days ago. I'll be interested to see if today is mostly precautionary or if this is flared up again.
Yeah, that's a good point. And we'll be talking to offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy after practice today. He'll be up on the podium for press conferences. Not sure how much we'll get out of him in terms of that injury, but I'm sure that'll be a question that will be asked. If I had a guess, I'm going to agree with you. Just based on the length of practice yesterday, how hard they went, I would imagine that this is a precautionary measure with preseason coming up and then just, you know, the level of training and high intensity that they've been putting out on the field. Tyreek is someone that they want to keep an eye on. He's going to be a very key part of this team, as we all know, as we've seen so far with his connection with Mahomes, just honestly even getting better than ever. So they're not going to want to lose him. And if that means sitting him out one day, he'll be in.
We're speaking with Allie Trost. She's up at Chiefs training camp in St. Joe. Allie, we heard yesterday you were there when Coach Reed was talking about the injury to Damian Williams. He's had the hamstring injury. He's missed 6, 7, 8 days now. And Coach Reed said he was frustrated by it, the fact that he's not available. And the biggest thing in the National Football League next to talent is availability. You have to be available. And I get it. He proved himself last year to be a valuable piece for the Kansas City Chiefs. But if you're not available, it's one of those things where you're out of sight and out of mind. And if Damian Williams, it's no fault of his if he's hurt, but he's opened the door to Carlos Hyde to win that starting job. He's opened the door a little bit for Darrell Williams, who showed a little bit at the end of the season last year. The door is open for other players as long as Damian Williams is out. And I get a coach's frustration when you can't get a guy on the field.
Right. And, I mean, the days of training camp are only getting, like, there are fewer and fewer of those as training camp is about to wind down here in the next week and preseason's about to kick off. So if he's not able to take the field once throughout training camp, and Reed is getting the looks of Darrell and of Carlos Hyde and is seeing potential in them. And then if they, you know, come out in preseason and prove themselves, they might, not saying they might take over that number one spot, but if he's not available, that's how it is. And after Reed had said, you know, expressed his frustrations with Damian not having practiced yet, he went on to talk about rookies and how getting the reps and getting the experience is so important, but said not just that, they have to earn it first. And so that was something that he emphasized. And Carlos Hyde has been doing a great job, as has Darrell. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in that running back position and if Damian's able to take the field at all in this next upcoming week.
All right, Allie, final thing for you from Chiefs training camp in St. Joe. You mentioned Derek Dieter is out again, and this is also a lingering injury for him. He had that tightness in his back a few days ago, and he's been out. For me, I have marked off 4 receiver locks for the Chiefs, the usual suspects, Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, DeMarcus Robinson, and Mecole Hardman, the early draft pick. And then after that, it might come down to special teams and your contributions there. We all know Derek Dieter is good friends with Patrick Mahomes. But if he's not available, he's going to be pushed by Rashard Davis, who I think has had a good camp. Felton Davis, yeah. Jamal Curtis, I think, has had a good camp. Devon Grayson and Byron Pringle, who they kept around last year through his injury, and Cody Thompson. So if Derek Dieter misses much more time, he falls into that danger zone area where he may not make this team.
Yeah, and it's interesting because going into camp, he was posting a lot on his own social media accounts, practicing with the other receivers, putting in the work, and back injuries, just the nature of a back injury and how long they can linger and last. And even though, you know, you may be cleared, it's just those are really tough to work with. And in terms of long-term health throughout a season, again, it's been described as back tightness and back spasms, but, you know, potentially it could become something worse. And I agree with you. There's the depth that they have and the potential that they can, that they have been seeing in some of the rookies and some of these other receivers pushes Derek Dieter pretty far down on that list. And talk about special teams. I think the most special team that Dieter might rely on here is that friendship with Patrick Mahomes. But when it comes down to it, this team has to win a Super Bowl this season. That's what their goal is. That's what they want. And if Derek Dieter's back injury is going to be a problem, I'm with you. I could see that really influencing how he incorporates into this team this season, if at all.
All right, Allie, thank you very much for that report from training camp. Appreciate you checking in. Hopefully we'll get you on a little bit later in the show, and you'll be around for all the press conferences as well.
We will be there.
All right, thank you.
That is
Allie Trost reporting from Chiefs training camp in St. Joe, Missouri. Our training camp coverage brought to you by Missouri Lottery, Mosaic Life Care, and GM. All right, on that note, we will take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll switch it over to Royals baseball. We'll touch a little bit on last night's debacle. But also we'll have some broader subjects as well with our friend Max Reaper, the editor-in-chief for Royals Review. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810, WHB.
Here we go. Don't fear the Reaper. Take one. Roll it.
All right. One, two, three, four.
One of the greatest sketches in the history of Saturday Night Live. More cowbell. Will Ferrell. Oh, man. I watched that this morning, and I fell over laughing. I'll go a few months without watching it, and all of a sudden, it'll pop into my head. Don't Fear the Reaper. And I'm like, I got to go to YouTube and look that up. And the reason I looked it up this morning is because our next guest is named Max Reaper, editor-in-chief of Royals Review. So, Max Reaper, more cowbell just for you.
I love it. A big shout-out for Chris for that. That's awesome.
Well, I was watching, like I said, I was thinking about it this morning. I was like, okay, let me go through the guest list. We got Max Reaper on the show. Oh, Max Reaper, Don't Fear the Reaper. Oh, more cowbell. Anytime I can get that on the show, it's just, I fall down laughing. And who's playing Bruce Dickens? Christopher Walken, gosh darn it. It's some of his lines in there. He keeps a straight face through the whole sketch. And he said, I put on my pants one leg at a time. The only difference is when I do, I make gold-plated records.
I think any sketch with Christopher Walken, I think, has a certain element of just, like, absolute crazy absurdity just because he's such a weird dude.
Yes.
Just the way he handles that sketch and just the seeing the guys crack up in the background, it makes it an all-time classic sketch,
yes.
I think.
If you can find Christopher Walken doing the Continental sketch from SNL too,
yeah.
That is just it's a riot. All right, Max. So we got our Will Ferrell cowbell discussion out of the way early. So unfortunately, we have to bring it down by talking about the Royals. And I'll start off with this. I know every team has a different strategy, but when it comes to Nelson Cruz, for crying out loud, I was when he went off for the 5 RBIs on Friday, I was like, oh, for crying out loud. Then he drills 3 home runs last night, and I'm like, really? And I got to thinking, there was a time when a lot of teams would just walk Barry Bonds. They didn't care, even if the bases were loaded. I believe that happened a couple of times. And it comes to teams having bad luck against certain players. And look, the Twins lineup, it's hard to avoid, trouble because they have a really good lineup. But for Nelson Cruz, I mean, for crying out loud, do we just keep serving it up to him?
Yeah, you're right. There seem to be certain guys that just feast on Royals pitching. I think Nelson Cruz has been one of those guys that just kind of terrorizes. But, I mean, you got to hit upon the answer right there. I mean, you can't really just pitch around him because that entire Twins lineup is just so home run heavy. I mean, they lead the majors in home runs by a pretty good margin at this point. And so it's kind of pick your poison, If it's not Nelson Cruz, it's going to be Max Kepler, or it's going to be Eddie Rosario, or it's going to be Miguel Sano. They've got so many big guys that can hit home runs and put the ball at the ballpark. And that's a big reason why they've had success this year is their offense is just so potent. And we've seen it over the last two nights, of course, 22 runs. And the Royals have always had, I think they've had an issue this year with the long ball a little bit.
Yep.
And with some of these guys, I think they're kind of living life on the edge because they don't strike out a ton of guys. So you're talking about, if you leave the ball up in the zone, these guys are going to make you pay for your mistakes. And we've seen that, I think, last couple nights. So, yeah, I'd like to see that. Yeah, I kind of like to see them pitch around Cruz a little bit, but at the same time, putting more base runners on for the next guy, I don't know if that's the best strategy either.
Well, to be fair, Nelson Cruz, it's not just the Royals. I was looking this up. In his last 9 starts, 11 home runs and 23 RBIs. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, what's crazy is that he it wasn't that long ago, I guess early in his career, he was on waivers, and like anyone could have picked him up. Ned Yost, I think, managed him for like 8 games in Milwaukee. So he was a guy that kind of took a while to figure it out. And so You know, sometimes with those guys, it takes a while to learn how to hit a major league breaking ball. But he certainly figured out, and he's had a nice long career since then, and certainly has terrorized the Royals over the last, couple of years. So, and hopefully the Royals can produce some more power hitters like that. We've seen another kind of slow developer like that in Hunter Dozier.
Yes.
And, maybe if Hunter Dozier can have that kind of nice long career, I mean, certainly we take that at this point. But, it kind of shows you how important it is to develop some power, to have a couple power hitters in your lineup. The Royals have a few of those, but they certainly need a lot more to match the firepower that the Twins are putting up there.
We're speaking with Max Reaper, editor-in-chief for Royals Review. Last night, the Royals lose 11-3 to the Twins. They'll try it again today. good luck. Jorge Soler got another home run last night. He's at 29. Do you believe Jorge Soler will break Mike Moustakas' club record, which was just set a couple of years ago?
Yeah, but I think we kind of have to put an asterisk by it just because this ball is so ridiculous this year.
Yes.
Not to put Jorge Soler down, because he has had a really nice season. The power has been great this year, all season. I think what's really encouraging the last couple weeks is that his walk rate, which was not, something he was pretty good at in his entire career, but he wasn't really drawing a lot of walks in the first half of the season. It's really starting to come on here in the last couple of weeks. I think maybe some of that, he had such a great first half, pitchers are pitching around him a little bit more. But I think it's also him just showing a little bit more patience, learning how to lay off some of the pitches that are 50-50 pitches off the plate a little bit. So that's been really encouraging him, and that's just made him that much better of a hitter, a guy that can get on base and hit home runs. Is a guy that the Royals really need in the middle of their lineup. So that's been really encouraging. But, yeah, he seems clearly on the pace to kind of get at least the approach Moustakas' record. It's interesting. We haven't had too much discussion about that. But I guess maybe as he approaches the record, maybe we'll have a little tracker to see how close he is approaching Moustakas' record. But it shouldn't be a surprise in this season when we're seeing home runs hit everywhere. I mean, I saw a guy – last week, hit a ball the opposite way, and he thought he popped out and ended up going over the fence. I mean, it's just been ridiculous this year, and I don't know if baseball is ever going to address it. They seem to keep denying that anything's different with the ball this year. And maybe, it wasn't intentional by any means, but, they need to do something with the ball, because I love home runs as much as the next guy, but when they are this cheap, when they're this plentiful, it kind of makes them less special, and then it's a less aesthetically pleasing game when we've emphasized home runs so much and de-emphasized making contact and putting the ball in play and then running around the bases. So hopefully baseball does something a little bit about that, but in the meantime, Jorge Soler can take advantage and have a career season and maybe set the single season club home run record.
Well, Cam Gallagher had one Friday night that I thought he kind of got caught I can't remember if it was on the inside of the handle or just the tip of the bat. And I was like, oh, that's a pop out to short center field. And then it crawls over the wall. And I was like, okay, come on. What are we doing here? So,
yeah, it's just the ball is just carrying so much differently than I think the last couple seasons. And the guys can tell. I mean, the guys that play the game can absolutely tell. The pitchers know, hey, I'm throwing good pitches in good locations, and guys are still kind of knocking it over the fence, even though they're hitting it with the handle of the bat. So, if Danny Duffy knows, and he's been in the game a long time, then there's probably something different with the ball this year.
Yeah, and Justin Verlander has talked about it as well, and he inspects baseballs really close. We're speaking with Max Reaper from Royals Review. Sticking with Jorge Soler for just a second, and about 6 weeks before the trade deadline, folks like us in the media kind of floated out, well, maybe Jorge Soler would be a valuable piece. And I thought Soren Petro brought up a good point on his show, saying the Royals are in a spot where they have to make a decision about Jorge Soler. If they don't think he's going to be in the long-term future, they needed to trade him. And this was coming up to the July 31st trade deadline. Or you start thinking about a contract extension. Obviously, the Royals did not move Jorge Soler, and you see, as you mentioned, his improved plate discipline with drawing walks, his power numbers. Do you think when the Royals are ready to compete, and I'm putting it at 2022 at my most optimistic, will Jorge Soler be a valuable piece of that process if the Royals are to compete again?
Yeah, that'll be an interesting decision that they'll have to make, and they've got him under club control right now through 2021, so if 2022 is your kind of your target date, then you'd have to start thinking about a contract extension for him. And you know, so there's a couple things. First of all, he's having a great season. So you're kind of, if you do start contract negotiations, you're doing so when the price is probably inflated now. I mean, because he's had such a good season. On the other hand, he still has that track record of kind of inconsistency and injuries. I think injuries is probably the big concern at this point because he's missed so much time. I mean, pretty much every year before this one, he's had some time out with an injury. So, you know, you have to weigh that, weigh those things. And so you're, and I mean, with the timing right now, you're kind of, you know, timing the market high right now. So, you know, does Soler fit into the future? You know, he's probably, you know, confined to designated hitter only role at this point. I think we've seen him in the field and, you know, he's not a guy that has to DH every day, but the more he's DHing and the less time he's in the field, probably the for the better. So that, you know, limiting him to that role, is going to have less value. And, but at that same, point, you know, maybe you get a little discount because he's not playing the field as much. So I will have to see if Soler is open to it. I don't know how the Royals see their future lineup if a guy like Soler makes sense if they're going to, like, speed and defense. But certainly, you know, like I talked about, you know, needing home run hitters. They don't have a whole lot of home run hitters in their lineup or guys even in the upper minors or even really in the entire minor league system. So they may need to extend Soler just simply out of necessity because, you know, you look at their organization right now, who are your big home run hitters? You've got Hunter Dozier, who looks like he's, you know, starting to come on as a guy that can hit 20 to 30 home runs. You've got maybe Ryan O'Hearn. I mean, he's been kind of inconsistent, was demoted this year. But I think he's capable of hitting 20 to 30 home runs if he can kind of, you know, have some consistency. And then you got Salvi coming back next year, who's a 20 to 30 home run hitter. So that's a pretty good base, but there's not a whole lot behind that. Hopefully maybe Khalil Lee can develop, but I don't see him as a big home run hitter. He can hit some home runs, like 15 to 20 a year, I think. Soler might be necessary just to have that big bat in the lineup. And he's a guy where if you do decide to trade him, I don't know if there's a whole lot of value for him because he is a DH only. He does have that injury track record. He has been inconsistent. And we saw at the deadline, I mean, teams aren't really trading for hitters. They're trading for pitchers.
Right.
And so it may be a thing where he's more valuable to the Royals than he would be on the trade market. And so it may be a smarter move just to hold on to him and see if you can get him on a decent extension to keep him through their the next phase of contention. So I that's what I would kind of expect them to do, at least hang on to him through 2021. And if there's a deal out there to be made to keep him, then they may explore that as well.
We're speaking with Max Reaper, editor-in-chief for Royals Review. All right, Max, we saw the Royals experiment with the opener down in AAA Omaha this year with both Kyle Zimmer and Josh Staumont. And I'll go beyond experiment. They just did it. And maybe it was on orders from the Major League Club. Let's see if this works. Maybe we can do it here. And Ned Yost comes out yesterday and says, no, we're not going to use it this season, even though Staumont and Zimmer are both on the roster. Do you think that's a mistake? I mean, in my opinion, you've already tried it in AAA. Your season is not really going anywhere. Your starting rotation is not the greatest. Why not try it for the final couple of months?
Yeah, the opener is an interesting experiment. And look, I think it gets a little overrated just because it works in Tampa because they've got pretty good pitchers. Ryan Stanek, you know, it was a former first-round pick, and he pitched pretty well in that role with Tampa Bay. But, you know, this is a season when you're, you know, way back in the standings. You're going to lose 90 to 95 games probably. Why not give it a try and see if it works? And, you know, and the advantage of the opener is that, you know, you have a reliever coming in a situation where he's facing the top of the order. Your starter gets to come in and face, you know, presumably, you know, lower in the order guys when he starts the game, and maybe he can go. That allows him to go a little bit deeper in the game, and so that maybe is a more efficient way of throwing your, you know, sequencing your pitchers. So you know, I think the verdict's still out there on whether or not that's a successful strategy, but it's worth trying at this point, and it did seem to work pretty well in AAA Omaha, at least for Kyle Zimmer and Josh Staumont, both of who have had kind of up and down careers. You know, Zimmer with injuries and a little bit of consistency this year, and Staumont with the ability, you know, he's had some trouble throwing strikes. So it might be worth doing just to see if you can get a little bit more out of them, maybe a little bit more out of your starting pitchers since they haven't really pitched well the last week or so. But it sounds like they're at least not going to do it this year. which is probably a little bit of a shame, but I'm not sold on the opener idea quite yet. So whatever they feel is best in that regard, I guess that's fine. But this is kind of the year you want to experiment and innovate and try to find whatever, kind of throw as much at the wall as you can and see what sticks. And so that's what the team should be doing at this point. So I understand there's a little disappointment they're not trying that.
I was speaking with Max Reaper, editor-in-chief for Royals Review. Max, Brad Keller on the Hill today, and I was looking over his last five starts and his earned runs. He's been pretty good, 4-0, 2-1-1. And then you go back to that six starts ago where he gave up six earned runs, but then before that, zero. He's been on a really solid stretch for about four to five weeks right now.
Yeah, it's been really encouraging to see, too. And I think for a lot of it, it's been his sliders working really well. He's avoided the long ball. He's getting a lot more swing and miss on that slider. And that's encouraging because, the pitching seemed like it was taking a little bit of a step forward a couple weeks ago, and then they just got kind of hammered against the Blue Jays and the Twins. Keller's still been kind of, I think, the bright light in this season, especially in the pitching staff. I know there's been a lot of criticism towards Cal Eldred and how the pitchers really haven't seemed to take a step forward. But Keller seems like a guy that I was expecting a lot of regression from, and he did a little bit, early in the year, but he's really made the adjustments and kind of battled back. And that, to me, that means that's almost more impressive when a guy has some struggles in a season after, he had some success, but then adjusts and is able to kind of come back and make something out of it. So, that's really encouraging to me. And the Royals really need a guy like that to kind of step up. We knew that before last year's draft, they didn't have much of any pitching in the organization as far as young pitchers. And they kind of stumbled upon Keller. So they kind of have a surprise guy like that that can kind of, be a solid part of the future, especially in the pitching staff. Because like I said, pitching is what teams are trading for. And if you don't have pitching, you're not going to contend. Especially with the way guys are hitting the ball out of the ballpark these days, you need a guy that, a couple guys really, that can kind of suppress that a little bit. And Keller, I think, he's done a pretty good job of doing that this year. And he may not be an ace or anything like that, but if he can be a guy you can slot in number three in your rotation behind maybe a Brady Singer and a Jackson Kohler, then that's, you're on your way to achieving a pretty competitive ball club. So I'm very encouraged what I've seen out of Keller this year. Hopefully he can finish strong and close it out with a pretty good sophomore season.
Well, hopefully we'll have some good stuff today. I had bad memories last night. Joe Nathan, former Twins closer, he was inducted into the Twins Hall of Fame. And Max, I was traveling with the Royals in the mid-2000s when they were just god-awful. And every time we played Minnesota, especially when we went to the Metrodome and the Royals were close, we're down by one going into the ninth. Maybe we get something. You see Joe Nathan coming out, it was like, damn, nope, not going to happen.
I believe he has more saves against the Royals than any other club. I mean, a lot of that's just because they played so many games against each other. But yeah, he was just an autumn. I mean, Mariano Rivera gets all the attention from that era, but Joe Nathan was, probably just a step below that. And he was just solid for so many years. And he was kind of the template of like teams saying, you know what, you can turn a bad starter into a really dominant reliever. It was kind of the Wade Davis model that the Royals later followed, because Joe Nathan was a pretty crummy starting pitcher with the Giants and later with the Twins for a little bit. And then the Twins had the idea, let's put him in the bullpen and see if it works. And he was just dominant there for well over a decade. And those Twins clubs, man, they used to beat up on the Royals.
Yes.
So that was bringing up some bad memories for me as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey Max, I appreciate you joining us on this Sunday morning, and we'll watch Brad Keller and Jake Odorizzi go head to head this afternoon in Minnesota, the final game of the series.
Thanks, Brad.
Appreciate it. That is Max Reaper, editor-in-chief of Royals Review. Good stuff. I am way late for a break. Chris has given me the look, so we'll take a quick timeout. We'll come back and wrap up. Maybe a final thought on that, and then we'll be awaiting Chiefs press conferences. They're in team drills right now, the special teams drills right now, so that means they'll be wrapping up shortly, and we'll have it for you live from St. Joe. You're listening to Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, final minute here. The news not so great up at Chiefs training camp in St. Joe. Injury bug continues to bite. Allie Trost, who is up there covering the team for us, reporting that defensive end Alex Okafor left the field with the trainers, went to the injury tent, and went up the hill. Also, Emmanuel Agba left practice in the front seat of a cart. Don't know how serious it is. Hopefully we get an update here as soon as they come to the podium in a few minutes. But you got two of the players you're really counting on out today. We don't know. They left. Maybe it was just a little something. We'll find out. All right, we'll come back, and we'll head back to St. Joe. We'll have the Kansas City Chiefs at the podium at training camp. This is Sports Sunday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bollig is running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB.